have led several trips to Israel over the years, on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, on pilgrimage to visit the Jewish state and to see where Jesus lived and where the events of the Old Testament took place, and to see what's going on over there in the modern day situation between Palestine and Israel, to learn the current geopolitical realities, as well as to experience and be amazed by the historic beauty and the historic character of this holy land. I have loved my trips to Israel. They are both exciting and exhausting and informative. My eyes have been opened. My mind has been changed several times about many things as I have visited and I have walked where Jesus walked, and I have looked at the same hills that Jesus looked at and crossed the same valleys or the same river that Jesus crossed. As I walked up to Jerusalem, and as I walked through Jerusalem, my heart and my mind was changed. It's an amazing experience. It's also an exhausting experience. I had always wanted to take my mother with me to Israel on a trip, and for a long time, mother said no, she couldn't go. There were too many things to do. My parents were going to go at one time, then they had to back out. After my dad's death in 2007, however, my mother started talking about being interested in going, and I finally convinced her in 2010 to join the group that I was forming from the congregation at St. Stephen United Methodist in Mesquite to take a pilgrimage trip to Israel. And so she joined me and 27 other church members on this trip to Israel in 2010. It was an amazing trip, an exciting trip, an eye-opening trip. Mother loved the experience of visiting Nazareth and Capernaum and visiting Mount Hermon and sailing on the Sea of Galilee and visiting Jerusalem. But the most daunting part of the trip was the day that we spent walking through Jerusalem. And yes, I said walking through Jerusalem. If you know anything about the old city, you know that the streets are very narrow. They were designed for foot traffic and animal traffic at best, not cars, and sometimes bikes and motorcycles go through them. But for the most part, you cannot ride a vehicle through the old city of Jerusalem. You have to walk. And so we walked. They took our bus there to one of the entrances to the city and let us out. They kick us out along with our guide and they say, go walk for 5 hours. And we'll pick you up back here. Wow. And we walked. And we walked. And we walked. And it was an amazing experience. And mother, in 2010, she was having some back problems at the time. And she had difficulty walking. But she was so excited about seeing Jerusalem. So excited about walking inside those walls. So excited about what she was seeing that the pain in her back, while there, she didn't care. I remember we arrived at the scene, the site of the Temple Mount, where the wall is, the wall where Jews come to pray. And we parceled out the little slips of paper that had prayer requests on them that had been written by the congregation there over the preceding month or two. And we had collected them together and brought them with us. And so we parceled them out. So everybody took several prayer slips with them. And then they would approach the wall, winding through the masses and the crowds, to walk up to the wall and to place the slips inside the stones in the crevices between the huge blocks that make up the retaining wall of Mount Moriah. Now, in Jerusalem, they segregate the men from the women. So the women have one side that approaches the wall. There's this fence. And then the men have a side where they can approach the wall. And so the women were parceled off, and they went off one direction. The guys, we all went off the other direction. We approached the wall. We stood there. We prayed. And every time I pray at the wall, I'm amazed at how it feels. It's an amazing sight. It's tall. It's huge on either side. The stones are massive. Huge stones. And the crowds there press in, and they all have one objective, getting to the wall to touch it and to pray. After I prayed for a while, I moved back from the wall, back out to the courtyard where I could wait for my people to return. And they started trickling back one at a time, all of them with a look of amazement on their face. And then I saw my mother. And I'd seen her going in. She was tired. It had been a long day already. We had a long day yet to go, but she was exhausted. She was tired. It had been a difficult morning for her. I know it had been, even though she did not complain. She did not say one negative word. Nevertheless, she was tired. I could tell it when she went to the wall. When she came back from the wall, she was exuberant. She was bursting with joy. She was about to explode with energy. And she came up to me. I reached out and I touched her shoulder, and she had tears running down her cheeks through her makeup, and she didn't care. She'd been touched by God. I could see it. I knew it. I know the feeling. She'd been touched by God at the wall. And she comes up to me, and in tears she says, "Greg, those stones, they're alive. They're like electric. And when I touched them, it felt like I was touching the face of God. They are alive, Greg." And she had a point. The stones that were the retaining wall stones are a mixture of different kinds of stones from different eras in the history of Jerusalem. When the Romans came and destroyed the second temple, they destroyed a temple that had been rebuilt from the first temple, from Solomon's temple. It was built on top of this hill there in the center, or side, actually, at that time, center of Jerusalem, right along the Kidron Valley. And the weight of the first temple was so much that they started building a retaining wall around it to keep the mountain in. And to create a larger surface on the top, they built that wall taller and taller, and they poured heaps and heaps of rubble into it to make the top of Mount Moriah level, to make the platform up there larger for more and more of a temple complex. And when the Babylonians destroyed it, then they returned to Jerusalem 90 years later. They rebuilt it. They rebuilt the retaining wall. They rebuilt the Jerusalem Temple Mount. They rebuilt the temple. By the time of King Herod the Great, it was being remodeled and rebuilt again and expanded with larger porticos and structures on the side. And then the Romans came in 70 AD and they sacked the city and they destroyed the temple and cast down the stones from the top of Mount Moriah to build a pagan temple up there. And when they built the pagan temple, it unfortunately started to press the mountain down again. And so they had to take the stones that they had thrown down from the top and rebuild the retaining wall. And they rebuilt it with the stones that had been there before, as part of the retaining wall, and stones that had been part of the first and second temples on that site. And today, that retaining wall is still there, made up of stones from the retaining walls from Solomon's day and later King's day. After the Babylonian captivity, the stones that were put there to retain the wall then, and the stones from the temple itself, intermixed with them to hold up Mount Moriah. And this is where the Jews and thousands of other visitors every single day come to pray, to be as close as they can get to the Holy of Holies, to the site of the temple, to the site where Jesus came in and cleansed out the money changers, to the site where Jesus came to teach and to preach, the site where Jesus came as a 12-year-old boy to both learn and amaze the rabbis, to the site where on the Day of Atonement they would slaughter lambs and offer them as burnt offerings and take the blood and sprinkle it on the Holy of Holies to make restitution for the sins of the people. This is as close as we can get today to being in that immediate presence of the Holy of Holies of the temple in Jerusalem, the stones, some of which made up that temple, built now into that wall. And when you go and when you stand there and when you touch that wall, you are touching history. And you are touching stones that truly have been and are today living stones, giving testament and testimony to the faith of millions. Peter tells us that we too are to be living stones, that Jesus, we come to Jesus who is himself a living stone, and we also are to be living stones. He writes, "Come to him, a living stone, though rejected by mortals, yet chosen and precious in God's sight, and be like living stones. Let yourselves be built into a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ." The Hebrew faith, the Hebrew religion, up until 70 AD, was one where they engaged in sacrifice to make restitution for sin and to say how much they loved God with sweet savor offerings and burnt offerings. They would bring these animals to be sacrificed again and again and again. I suppose that God, like me, likes barbecue, or at least the smell of it, because they did tons of this stuff there. Until the temple was destroyed in 70. And the faith, which had been evolving under the Pharisees, evolved even further. And sacrifice went from a literal event with blood to a spiritual event in the heart, where one made a sacrifice of oneself to God, a sacrifice of one's needs and desires, a sacrifice of one's hopes and dreams to God. And the church did something very similar. The church saw in Jesus the ultimate eternal sacrifice, the ultimate eternal lamb, the ultimate and eternal offering to God for restitution for sins of the world, for thanksgiving, for peace, for joy, for hope. In Jesus, the church sees an eternal sacrifice of God himself coming to be with us and to bridge the gap that we have created between us and God. So we no longer have sacrifices on our altars where we lay a lamb and we slaughter it and we burn it. Sometimes I think maybe we ought to reinstitute it. When my dog gets through the trash, I threaten her. I say, "I'm going to sacrifice you someday, Fanny, because she's messy." We no longer take an animal and slaughter it. But we are called to make a sacrifice and to be living stones, to be a royal priesthood, and to be a chosen people. The translation down here, "you are a chosen race," that's a really bad translation. It's really a chosen people, a chosen family, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people. Actually, there it says God's precious possession. We are called to be God's own people, the people of God, those who belong to God. We're called to be a spiritual house, a spiritual temple. We know that the church building, as important as the church building is not the church. I am the church. You are the church. We are the church together. This is a song we sing. We're going to sing it today. I teach it to kids when I lead them in chapel service at Little Ark and other places. I am the church. You are the church. We are the church together. All of God's people all around the world. Yes, we're the church together. We sing this hymn, but do we believe it? If we are, then we are living stones. If we believe this message that we are the church, then we are called to be living stones. We are called to be the church, a holy temple for God. Our mothers teach us this. Mother used to tell me all the time that your body is a temple to God. And I think to myself, oh my goodness, I've ruined that temple. And there have been times that's true. Take me to a pizza buffet, I'll run it every time. We are called to be a spiritual house and a holy priesthood. We're called to be living stones like Jesus, the stone that the builders rejected, has become the cornerstone of our lives. We're called to be living stones, part of a living temple, showing God's love for all. It's not just for us. Peter makes that clear too when he says, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. We're called to do this through Jesus Christ, making spiritual sacrifices. Why and for what purpose? In order that you may proclaim the mighty acts of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Not just for us. This is not just about you and me, friends. It's about proclaiming the miraculous deeds of God so that others might know the love of God. Others might receive the love of God. Others might hear and understand, maybe for the first time in their lives, about the love of God, and that God loves them and cherishes them and does not reject them, but wants to welcome them in again and again. And no matter what we have done, because of Jesus, we have nothing to fear, but can approach the throne of grace in the marvelous light of God's love and reach out our hands and touch the Holy of Holies again. My mother was right. Those stones, some of which were from the temple, those stones, some of which had been there since Solomon's day, those stones, some of which had simply held up that mountain, those stones which have been built there and then rebuilt there and carved there and shaped there, those stones are living stones. And we are called to be living stones too. A reminder of the presence of God with others. Yes, I am the church. You are the church. And we are the church together, and we have a call and a charge to keep and a God to glorify. And when we do, offer spiritual sacrifices to our God, placing ourselves, not a lamb, not a turtle dove, not a pigeon, but ourselves on the altar of God's love. When we dedicate ourselves to God, we know that we touch the very Holy of Holies and are made into living stones ourselves. May we do that today and every day. Place ourselves on God's altar. Make a spiritual offering of ourselves and become living stones in God's holy eternal temple. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and may my fellow living stones say,
let me dwell in your presence, Lord. Let me learn at your
been listening to a sermon by Dr. Gregory Neal, Senior Pastor of the First United Methodist Church in Commerce, Texas, and Rector of Grace Incarnate Ministries. Copyright 2017 by Dr. Gregory S. Neal, all rights reserved. For more information and for other sermons by Dr. Neal, visit us on the web at www.revneal.org. That's www.revneal.org. You are also invited to visit us in person at First United Methodist Church, 1709 Highway 24, Commerce, Texas, 75428. This program was produced by Dr. Greg Neal.